Your client hires a tower crane for 5 years. The hire company undertakes to keep it in working order. 4 months in, it skips a service, the crane breaks down, and the site loses it for 7 weeks. Your client hires a substitute, then writes, treating the hire agreement as at an end. Was that letter a good idea? No. It is the only repudiation in the story. The hire company broke its promise. Your client walked away and became the party in breach. What separates those two positions is one question. What kind of term was broken? That is this episode. Classification and interpretation of terms, the sixth topic in contract law. Keep the builder in mind. We are coming back. Here is the root. Three categories of term. First, conditions, warranties, and the innominate term in between. Then the terms statute classifies for you. Then how courts decide which is which and what happens to time. Then interpretation, what the words mean and what a court may look at. Then rectification, for when the document is simply wrong. And last, variation. Start with why this matters. Not all terms are equal. When one is broken, the remedy depends on how that term is classified. One question decides everything. Can the innocent party walk away or only claim money? Classification questions are extremely common on this paper. Conditions first. A condition goes to the root of the contract, so fundamental that its breach would deprive the innocent party of substantially the whole benefit. Break a condition, and the innocent party may terminate the contract and claim damages. Both. That is the strongest position contract law offers, the story that fixes it. An opera singer was engaged for a series of performances. She fell ill and missed the opening night. Performing from the start was a condition, and missing the opening went to the root of what was promised. The producers could terminate and hire a replacement. Poussard and Spears from 1876. Notice the word may. Termination is an election, not an automatic consequence. The innocent party can instead affirm the contract and claim damages alone. Then the sting. Once they affirm knowing of the breach, the right to terminate for that breach is gone. It does not come back. Watch for that at the quick check. Warranties sit at the other end. A warranty is a lesser, subsidiary term, not central to the purpose of the contract. Break one, and the remedy is damages only. No termination. A singer had to attend 6 days of rehearsals before a run of concerts. He arrived late and missed the first 3 days. Warranty, not condition, because the purpose was the concerts. Bettini and Guy, also 1876. Your turn. A training company engages a specialist for 12 workshops after a 4-day induction so the material matches the client's house style. The specialist skips most of the induction, then delivers the first 3 workshops on time. The company terminates. Condition or warranty? Warranty. The induction is preparatory. The workshops are the purpose, and they are being delivered. Now, the category that decides most exam questions. Some terms cannot be classified in advance at all. They are innominate or intermediate, and the remedy turns on the consequences of the breach that actually happened. Deprived of substantially the whole benefit? Terminate. Minor? Damages. You are classifying the breach, not the term. A ship was chartered for 24 months under a term requiring it to be seaworthy. The engines were old, the crew incompetent, and 20 weeks were lost to repairs. The charterers tried to terminate. Seaworthiness cannot be labelled in advance, said the Court of Appeal. Its breach runs from a missing life jacket to a hole in the hull. Hong Kong Fur Shipping and Kawasaki Kissin Kaisha from 1962. The test that came out of it is Lord Diplock's, and it is the one to memorize. Does the breach deprive the innocent party of substantially the whole benefit the parties intended them to obtain? Those charterers still had 17 months to run. So, no. Damages only. Back to our builder. 5 years of hire, an undertaking to keep the crane working, 7 weeks out of action in month 4. Condition? No. Its breach could be trivial or catastrophic, so it is innominate. Did 7 weeks deprive the builder of substantially the whole benefit of 5 years? It did not. The cost of the substitute crane is recoverable. The letter is not. Statute classifies some terms for you. Under the Sale of Goods Act, 1979, 4 implied terms are conditions outright. Section 13, correspondence with description. Section 14, 2, satisfactory quality. Section 14, 3, fitness for a particular purpose made known to the seller. Section 15, sale by sample. Section 12, the right to sell, is a condition too. Reject, terminate, claim damages. Concrete version. A restaurant orders 50 cases of oil, described in the written order as extra virgin, cold-pressed Italian olive oil. What arrives is a Spanish and Tunisian blend. Wholesome. Usable. Wrong. The goods do not correspond with their description. Section 13 is a condition, and the restaurant rejects the lot. Consumers are different. The Consumer Rights Act, 2015, governs consumer contracts and drops the condition and warranty language entirely. Goods must be of satisfactory quality, fit for a particular purpose, and as described, under Sections 9, 10, and 11. The remedies are tiered instead. A short-term right to reject within 30 days, then repair or replacement, then a final right to reject or a price reduction. A consumer buys a laptop, and on day 9, the screen starts freezing. The retailer offers a repair and points to its own returns policy. What can the consumer insist on? A refund. Inside 30 days, the right to reject is the consumer's, and no trader's policy cuts down a statutory right. How does a court decide? No single test. It is construction in all the circumstances, and 5 factors do the work. An express label. Statute. Precedent. The consequences of the actual breach. And commercial certainty. Express labels usually work. Call a term a condition, and a court will generally respect it. Generally. The House of Lords once held that a term labeled condition was not a true condition. Treating every minor breach as a ground for termination would have been unreasonable. The facts: 96 returns over 8 years, 3 of them 2 days late. Strong evidence. Not a conclusion. Time gets its own rule, and it is heavily examined. At common law, time stipulations in commercial contracts are prima facie conditions. A sugar trader who owes 20 days notice of collection and gives 12 days has broken a condition, however little inconvenience it caused. In equity, the presumption runs the other way. Time is not of the essence unless the parties say so, the subject matter demands it, or a party gives reasonable notice after unreasonable delay. Under Section 10 of the Sale of Goods Act 1979, time of payment is prima facie not of the essence. Time of delivery usually is. Interpretation now, and it is objective. What would a reasonable person, with all the background knowledge reasonably available to the parties at the time of contracting, have understood the language to mean? Not what either party privately intended. The leading restatement, from 1998, set out 5 principles. The matrix of fact is everything that shaped how a reasonable person would read the words. Commercial purpose, the transaction, the market. Two things are shut out: prior negotiations and declarations of subjective intent. So, negotiation emails calling the split equal are inadmissible on meaning. They might found a rectification claim instead. Then, the words themselves, their natural and ordinary meaning. Courts will not depart from clear language without good reason. Picture a 40-year lease. The service charge is £250 in year one, rising 12% compound, whatever the services cost. By the 35th year, it passes £11,000 against a real cost of about £900. Harsh. Clear. It stands. Arnold and Britain from 2015. Where words genuinely bear two meanings, commercial common sense is the tiebreaker. A buyer, paying in stages for bespoke plant, insists on a bank guarantee first. The maker goes insolvent, the plant half-built, and the bank says the guarantee covered only a repayment that could scarcely ever arise. The Supreme Court preferred the reading that made commercial sense. Rainy Sky and Cookman Bank from 2011. Two decisions pulling opposite ways? No. A later Supreme Court judgment in 2017 reconciled them. Interpretation is a unitary exercise, weighing natural meaning, purpose, the factual matrix, and business common sense. So, start with the natural meaning. Clear words, apply them. Genuinely ambiguous, prefer the commercially sensible reading. A balance, not a hierarchy. Four named canons survive. Contra profferentum. An ambiguous term is read against whoever drafted it or relies on it, which usually means exclusion clauses. Ejusdem generis. General words after specific words are confined to the same kind. Cats, dogs, and other animals covers domestic pets, not elephants. Two more, briefly. Expressio unius. Mentioning one thing implies the exclusion of others. Noscitur associis. A word takes meaning from its neighbors. Entire agreement clauses next. The clause says, the written contract is the whole agreement and stops a party relying on pre-contractual statements as terms. It does not by itself exclude liability for misrepresentation. That needs separate, clear words, subject to the reasonableness test under Section 3 of the Misrepresentation Act, 1967. Rectification is not interpretation. Interpretation asks what the words mean. Rectification changes the words because they do not record what was agreed. It corrects the record, not the deal, and a court tries interpretation first. Two routes in. Common mistake needs four things: a prior agreement or common continuing intention, a document that fails to record it, an error in recording, not in the bargain, and convincing proof. A landlord and tenant agree rent of £50,000. The lease is typed as £5,000 and both sign. Rectified. Unilateral mistake is harder. One party is mistaken and the other knows it and stays silent to take advantage. That is what makes it inequitable to hold the mistaken party to the words. Last stretch. Variation, the part people improvise in practice. Parties may change their contract after formation, but a variation is itself a contract. Agreement, consideration, intention to create legal relations. Miss the consideration, and there is nothing to enforce. Consideration is where variations die. Performing a duty you already owe the same promisor is not good consideration. But where the variation confers a practical benefit on the promisor, that can be enough. A manufacturer owes its own customer £3,000 for each week it delivers late. So when its supplier threatens to stop, it promises a further £6,000. The batches arrive, the promise binds. The doctrine has a hard edge. It reaches services, not part payment of debts. There the old rule survives. Payment of a lesser sum does not discharge the whole debt without fresh consideration. Payment early, in a different form, or with an additional item. Take £30,000 on the due date for a £50,000 debt, and you can still sue for the £20,000. Then the clause that catches everyone. A no oral modification clause says the contract may be varied only by a document in writing signed by both parties. Effective? Yes. The Supreme Court held in 2018 that such clauses serve real commercial purposes, stopping informal conversations, undermining a written agreement, and protecting both sides from ill-considered changes. Rock Advertising and MWB Business Exchange. So, a software license at £2,000 a month, dropped by telephone, to £1,200 for 3 months, is not varied at all. The client pays the lower figure, and the company still recovers £2,400 in arrears. A narrow estoppel was left open, but it needs more than the promise itself. Before you advise on any oral variation, look for this clause. Two softeners remain. Parties can vary a contract by conduct, though conduct will not override a no oral modification clause unless estoppel applies. Promissory estoppel stops a party going back on a clear and unequivocal promise not to enforce strict legal rights. 5 requirements. A clear and unequivocal promise. Reliance, which need not be detrimental as long as it influenced conduct. It must be inequitable to go back on it. It is a shield, not a sword. And it is suspensory, not extinctive. Which decides real money? A franchisor tells a franchisee that while the road outside is shut, it will take £1,800 a month rather than £3,000. The road reopens. The franchisor cannot claim the £21,600 shortfall because the promise bars it. It can restore the full fee for the future on reasonable notice. A word on how SQE1 tests this. You will not be asked to name a case or quote a section number. You get a scenario, 5 answers, and 1 instruction. Pick the best one. So learn the rules and how they decide facts. The names in this episode are memory pegs, nothing more.
If you keep only 3,
Hong Kong Fur Shipping and Kawasaki Kissin Kaisha, because the innominate term is where most classification questions live. Arnold and Britain, because clear words win, even when the bargain turns out terrible. And Rock Advertising, because a signing requirement beats a phone call. 4 traps the examiners set. 1. The word warranty. In everyday English, it is a guarantee on a product. In contract law, it is a minor term giving damages only and no right to terminate. 2. The label is not the answer. A term the parties call a condition usually is one. But where treating every trivial breach as a ground for termination would be unreasonable, a court will look behind the word. 3. Practical benefit does not reach debts. Promising more for services already owed can bind. Accepting less for a debt already owed does not, unless something fresh is given. 2 rules. 1. Easy confusion. 4. Never answer a rectification question with interpretation. a rectification claim, admits the words are clear and says they are wrong. Arguing about what the words mean is construction. Arguing that the document records the wrong deal is rectification. Quick check, and it has two steps. A company orders 500 bespoke desks, the contract stating that delivery by March 1st is of the essence. Only 300 arrive by then, the rest arrive on March 15th. Knowing the date has been missed, the company takes in all 500, installs them, and opens the office. 2 months later, having found a cheaper supplier, it writes, rejecting the desks and terminating for late delivery. Three candidate answers. 1. Yes, time was expressly of the essence, so the date was a condition, and its breach justifies termination. 2. No, the company affirmed with knowledge of the breach, though it may still claim damages. 3. No, a buyer who takes delivery loses every remedy for a breach it knew about. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is 2. Time, expressly of the essence, does turn the delivery date into a condition, and the breach did give a right to terminate. But that right is lost by election. Taking in all 500 desks, installing them, and opening the office is unequivocal affirmation. It is acceptance of the goods too, which reduces the breach of condition to a breach of warranty. Why the others fail. 1. Classifies correctly, then stops. An accrued right to terminate can still be lost before it is exercised. 3. Overshoots. Affirmation bars rejection and termination, not the claim for the loss the delay caused. The company keeps the desks and still recovers its damages. 5 things to take away. 1. Classification decides the remedy. Condition, terminate, and claim damages. Warranty, damages only. Innominate, look at what the breach actually did. 2. Statute classifies for you. Under the Sale of Goods Act 1979, the description, quality, fitness, and sample terms are conditions, and consumers get the tiered scheme in the Consumer Rights Act 2015 instead. 3. Interpretation is objective. Negotiations are excluded, clear words win, and commercial common sense breaks a genuine tie. 4. Rectification corrects the document, not the deal. 5. A variation needs consideration, and a signed writing requirement is real. And our builder? The crane undertaking was innominate. 7 weeks out of 5 years was not enough, so the letter, meant to end the hire, was itself the repudiation. Classify the breach before you write the letter. Next time, misrepresentation. Practice this topic with exam-style questions at sqe1prep.co.uk. This episode is for education and exam revision only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the SRA or Kaplan.